Hey, Pasta Fam. Ava's here to give you guys a little treat. Caroline and I decided that we wanted to give you our first two episodes of our brand new series, Avis and Caroline Binge, so you don't have to. Our series will cover a number of shows canceled too soon. And first up on the docket is The LA Complex, starring Cassie Steele, aka Manny Santos. And we are super excited to give you the scoop, the recap, and all of the girl talk involved with covering and rewatching this series. We had a lot of fun with it, and we are really excited to give you this preview. If you would like to hear more of our binge series, we will be releasing it weekly. We keep all Friend of the Pad and above Patreon content exclusive to those paid tier members for 4 months. So we hope you consider joining our Friend of the Pad or above Patreon tier. And we also hope you enjoy this preview. This is a very serious environment, Caroline. How dare you?
The hell it is.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of Avis and Caroline Binge, so you don't have to. I'm Avis.
I'm Caroline.
And we are starting our binge on the LA Complex today. I am going to be exclusively watching the odd episodes, which means I'm going to be kicking us off with our first episode. And Caroline is exclusively going to be watching the even episodes, which means I have not seen any of the evens. Caroline has not seen any of the odds. We are filling each other in.
For the sake of transparency, I do want to make it known. I have watched this series before, twice, I think. Mm-hmm. It's been about a decade. I remember key plot points. I forget a lot. And we're going to be doing this as though I've never seen an episode of it.
Yes. And I mean, to be fair, there's a lot of details that – There's lots of little details that they don't – they say one time and they expect you to be paying attention. So I think that's helpful in our recap because there's definitely some details I know you don't remember.
Back when we still had media literacy.
That's a whole nother conversation. But so do we want to say anything about it? Or do we just want to jump in?
For people who don't know, the LA Complex was a 2009 series?
Yeah, that's the ish. That sounds right.
Originally supposed to be a continuation of Degrassi, but they decided not to go that route so as to make it more enticing to non-Degrassi fans.
2012.
Oh, 2012.
Yeah, first episode date, April 24th, 2012. It just turned 14. 12,
I can
count.
I've always described it as like if Degrassi and Melrose Place had a baby.
Yeah.
It's about a bunch of aspiring creatives living in a long-stay motel in L.A. I think they're all Canadian. If they're not all Canadian, most of them are Canadian.
Most of them are motherfucking Canadian. That's just a...
And it shows.
And it shows. But one thing they do well is they make a good effort in it looking like L.A.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because most things that they say are set in L.A. are shot in Vancouver or somewhere in Canada. So that's why Canada ends up looking very L.A.
Yeah.
So it works. They save money and it still looks like L.A. But... Yeah, so we got Cassie Steele in here leading the brood. So I guess that's all we – I guess that's it. Let's do this.
Yeah, tell me about this new show. New old show.
New old show. All right. So we pan over the L.A. skyline onto a regular L.A. street where Abby is sitting in her car. And she's got a junky little red car that's filled with parking tickets and her headshots in the windshield. And she is sitting out front of a little building, like staring this building down for some reason. And she gets a phone call. And it's her boyfriend calling from Toronto, from his little, I think it's like a auto shop type deal. He's a mechanic. And he says,
are, you know, you need to come home, Abby. Those are his first words. It's kind of an aggressive conversation. Like, in all honesty, it's like, no hi. It's like, you need to come home, Abby. Like, hello. But she immediately asks to call him back because she sees the man. Well, I guess for us, it's just a man, but he's the man that she's been looking for. And he leaves the building. So she's like, ooh, this is her chance. She says that she knows it's not ideal, essentially, the situation, but he says that he hasn't seen her in 6 months and he's not happy. So we cut over to Raquel as she sees the guy leaving the building. We cut over to Raquel and she hands over her headshot to an off-screen hand and she says that she is auditioning for Cindy, not the mom role. And she looks really embarrassed. She looks like, did this bitch just ask me, you know, but she actually, you know, she sits down at the end of a long line of visibly younger actresses and she looks uncomfortable. Like you can tell that she's not
mom role age or
she's Hollywood mom role age. Okay. You know, she's cusping.
But she's not like,
she's not old. No, okay. But she is not as young looking as the girls that are sitting around her. They're clearly, if they're 20, you know, they're just 20. And she is about to be 30 if she's not 30 already. Which in Hollywood, you might as well be a mother.
Right, you might as well be 60 at
you
that
might
point.
As well be geriatric. But then we get her name flash across the screen, Raquel. We flash back to Abby as she tries to get into the front door. Her boyfriend tells her that a couple months was their deal, not half a year. And Abby tells him that she cannot leave now because she's getting traction and momentum is what this city is all about. And she tries to tug on the door that the guy just went out of and she's finding it locked. We click on over to number 51, Alicia. She is a seasoned dancer in a high energy audition. She is dancing her ass off. She's flipping her hair. She is moving. You can tell she's been doing this a while. And she actually is talking to a newbie who is clearly getting her ass kicked by these moves. So she gives the newbie some water and she's like, you need to bring water to these things, which I don't think she should. Like, as a dancer, you shouldn't have to tell another dancer to bring water to an audition. That's a little bit weird.
I bring water to the fucking grocery store.
I bring water fucking everywhere. And no, it is not in a Stanley. It very much so is giving, like, you know, I'm showing you the ropes sort of thing. So that's why we know she's seasoned. This is not her first rodeo. But she has like this natural confidence and sweetness. And it's like she wants to help those around her. So that's what I got out of that little water bottle fiasco. Her name flashes across the screen as she flips her long blonde hair and continues dancing. It's very, you know, step up her little scene, her little vignette. So Abby is running up a fire escape now, and her boyfriend is saying, babe, you can still audition up here. Yeah, he means up in Toronto. And Abby tells him that he doesn't understand how things work in LA. And he's saying, so you do understand? And she says, well, I'm figuring it out. So
does she not understand how Lifetime movies work?
No, she doesn't realize that there is a plentiful amount of like, work.
Toronto is like Canadian Hollywood, yeah.
They don't want you to know this, especially not
and
in 2012.
And it has healthcare.
And you have healthcare, and you have your boyfriend, you have your parents, you clearly have like food and like a safe place to stay. I don't know, Abby, this seems like not the best situation to be insisting upon, but yeah. So we now pan across a cast of baristas, aka photos, headshots on the wall. And at the end of the line is Nick. He is a barista in a coffee shop and he is manning the counter as a customer comes up and tells him that he saw his set at the Laugh Factory and gives him kind of an embarrassed look like, dude, you need to work on your set. And of course, Nick starts to like, you know, get flustered and say there was a bunch of technical issues. I was off my game that day. And the customer just kind of laughs at him and tips and walks away. And this is the story of Nick's life doing bad stand up and getting berated for it. Abby continues to scale the fire escape as she suggests her boyfriend come to LA. But he's like, no, you know, my business is picking up here. I'm getting swamped with work. I can't make it happen. And she's like literally in a situation where she needs to call him back. But he's not listening to her. But she kicks in the window to the room she has just climbed up to. And he asks her if she's okay as she's doing this because she sounds like she's kicking a window in. And she's like, I'm fine. I'm okay. I'm just breaking and entering. It's fine. So we meet Tariq. He is picking up a large amount of dry cleaning when he receives a call from a guy named Jamaica J. And Jamaica J is wondering where the fuck he's at because obviously he's the lackey. And he also wants to know where his lunch is because you were supposed to have lunch here like 20 minutes ago. Like, this is your job.
Get it together, Tariq.
Get it together, Tariq. So Tariq, you know, falls in line, but he does want to know if they are going to have time to listen to his beats later. But Jamaica J hangs up on him, you know, and that's where we get his name Flash as he steps out of the laundromat dry cleaners in frustration. We get his little Tariq name Flash because he's Tariq. This is his job. This is his life. We're back to Abby. Her boyfriend says that she hasn't booked anything, and she says she's come very close a number of times. There's like this commercial, that commercial. She almost did that one. There was a couple like name drops. I don't recall. She's tried. She's not shooting any baskets though. It's at this point that her boyfriend says that he's not happy, and he's pretty sure she's not happy. And it's either she come home or they're done. Like, damn.
Love an ultimatum.
I love it. I love it. At least it wasn't at the top, you know. At least he talked to her a little bit. But she sees the doorknob jiggling and she, like, once and for all is like, I need to call you back. Does not wait for him to respond. Just clicks and grabs a hockey bag because, of course, she's Canadian. She's got to have all her shit in a hockey bag. Grabs a hockey bag and tries to make a beeline for the door as her former landlord rushes in holding a coffee. And he's like, Abby, that's my shit. You didn't pay me. And like, this dude's first reaction is to grab a hockey stick. So not only does she have her shit in a hockey bag, we must presume that Abby plays hockey as well, because why is this shit in her room? Why is this shit in her?
It's not her boyfriend's, because he's...
Is this the landlord's hockey shit?
Are just issued a hockey stick at birth that they must bring with them everywhere.
Everywhere. This is your hockey stick. Yeah. So she is being berated by a man now carrying a hockey stick. He abruptly abandoned that coffee. Now we are introduced to Connor, who is doing a promotional photo shoot dressed as a doctor in scrubs. He is told that they have the shot before he approaches the director at the monitor. And he asks if the promotional stills are what they're looking for. And he very seriously says, you must tell me if this is not what you need. And she's like, no, this is everything I need. I'm orgasming right now. These photos are going to be everywhere. You're going to be big, big. And of course, we get Connor's name in like green. It's like Envy Green. It's like they all get a color. But Connor's was the only one that stood out to me as like green with Envy. And that's, we get his name Flash as he's like staring at the screen and his name in lights. And it's very prophetic. As Abby is fleeing with her belongings, her former landlord yells that her hockey bag of stuff belongs to him as collateral for unpaid rent. And he yells he just wants the money, Abby, before busting out her rear window with the hockey stick.
Bitch, how's she going to pay you faster?
She's like, now got
you
repairs.
You just added a couple $100 expense to her like, life.
You can't bleed a stone. You've got to give her like a chance to like, I don't know, not incur any more debt. But yeah, this is a flawed approach. And finally, we see Abby's name flash across the screen. I think hers is purple. As the glass shards fly. which I get, I feel like these, all these little, you know, their names are just like supposed to be the encapsulation of their character. Which I feel like will probably carry throughout the show. I'm gonna keep my eye out.
Is Nyx like a really sad blue?
I think Nyx is like yellow.
Okay. Is it a sad yellow at least?
It's a sad man yellow. Yeah. It's not like a vibrant, like.
It's not like man in the yellow hat.
No. It's not a sunny yellow. No. It's a sad yellow. So later Abby is parked and she tries to call Chris back to apologize for hanging up on him, but she doesn't get him. She gets his voicemail, but that's probably good because her engine catches on fire. She's sitting there like, that's super dangerous, super, yeah, super concerning. And she calls Tariq immediately and like begs him to come pick her up because she's now stranded and can't go to a really important audition for like a director she's obsessed with. And Tariq's like, I can't. Dynasty is flubbing these beats. Like, he is fumbling the ball. And I really think that there's an opportunity for me to get in here and show them some of my beats and be able to provide for beats for Drake. Because, of course, Dynasty, who, fun fact, is played by BLT.
From Degrassi Junior High?
Yes, from Degrassi Junior High. I love this man. He has been working. And he's, you know, the head honcho sort of vibes. But he is trying and he can't come up with beats on his own. So Tariq is like, I think that there's an opportunity. I don't think he's able to come up with these. So I think I'll be able to slide in here. But I can't do it if I'm not here. So he's like, get a cab. And she's like, I have no cab money. Please help. So we cut over to Connor packing up his room. Nick is there running some stand-up by him. So it's very terrible stand-up. This is the only little bit of it I got. My favorite bag is this one bag because they all have to, and all the other bags are jealous of this bag because they all have to go inside of this favorite bag.
Is he talking about like plastic bags?
I guess so. Like all the, like the plastic bags full of bags that you, you know, put under your sink or whatever.
Yeah. But
like,
the bag I just that don't holds the bags.
Yeah, I think the favorite bag is the bag that holds the bags. But like, okay. It's not funny. It's not funny. And Connor like is attentively listening and still doesn't understand the joke. And he asks to be told it again. And Nick is like, comedy is not, like, a joke is not funny when you have to repeat it a second time. Like, it doesn't get funnier.
So it's not, like, the kind of thing where it's, like, you know, a conversation that is funny when you have it in your with your friend doesn't translate well on stage in front of strangers. It's just not funny.
It's just not funny because your friend has to be your friend has to be in there with you. And Connor is not there. He's not in it. He is not involved. He does not know what this man is talking about. But he's playing along. He's trying. And he can't get there with him. But basically, Nick's ready to throw in the towel. So he, like, lays on Connor's bed, but, like, sees there's pills in the trash can. And he's like, are you throwing these away? Ooh, I could use the money because everybody in this show is hard up, obviously. And he asks Connor if he can sell the pills. And Connor's like, sure, because this is not a red flag that there's like prescription pills that should have his name on them. I don't know why. I don't know. So just as Connor agrees, Raquel storms in and demands to know why she was not given an audition for the co-star. So it's like the counterpart to his doctor, mm-hmm, in Connor's show.
Is the co-star a mom?
No, the co-star is like a the co-star is like a contemporary. It's supposed to be like a similar aged doctor. And that's kind of what Connor says. He's like, yeah, they wanted to go like a different direction. They wanted someone closer to his age, a different type, and he didn't have any like say over it. And she's like, fuck that. You're the star. You need to tell them I want this. I want my friend on the show. I want my grilled cheese with the crust cut off. Like, she's like,
do we think maybe this attitude might have something to do with why Raquel's not getting parts?
I think it's heavily implied. heavily imply that this has something to do with why Raquel's fucking like very popular show suddenly was canceled. They were fucking sick of her shit. But he's basically like, they wanted someone closer to my age. And she's like, well, remember this the next time. Remember that the next time you call me lonely at 2 a.m. that you want someone, you know, find someone closer to your age. Like, she's pissed off. She resent she's more upset about the age thing than anything else. She's just okay. Not. Yeah. She's like, fuck
what
you.
What you get? She's in a city and an industry that is very youth driven. Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, she's pushing 30 and she's feeling it. So Tariq actually calls Nick during this scene and asks him to help Abby out with her car, and Nick comes to the rescue. Abby's like, thank you, but she's really trying to hurry him up so she can make her audition. And he's like talking about how, oh, it's no problem because Tariq hooked me up with Lupe Fiasco tickets once, even though Lupe Fiasco fucked my girlfriend backstage while I was still trying to find backstage, and it just wasn't great.
Okay, and so Abby- Nick doesn't do well with girls, but also manages to land girlfriends hot enough to fuck
Lupe Fiasco,
who at this point in time
is like a big fucking deal. Yeah. And of course,
I can sing exactly one song all these 14 years later, but
I have two. But yeah, I have two.
Okay, and one of them is that Superstar one.
No, then I have three.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, Superstar, Kick, Push, and the one with Daydreamin' with Jill Scott. I love that song. Daydream, I fell asleep amongst the flowers. Yeah.
Okay.
He's got three. Three of them, Lupe. I got you. If you're listening to this Patreon exclusive.
Lupe Fiasco.
Does Lupe Fiasco subscribe to our Patreon, guys?
Oh, that'd be cool.
That'd be so fucking cool. No, so he's definitely had some troubles, but yeah, like by that logic, he's pulling some eight to tens, you know? I'm gonna say Lupe Fiasco has high standards at this point in time.
Yeah.
But obviously Abby doesn't give a fuck about this because she just wants to get to her audition, but her agent calls and tells her that she missed the audition, and she's like, can you try to get me in tomorrow? And he's like, I'll try, but like, I don't have confidence in myself and you shouldn't either, essentially. And Nick does offhandedly mention that, like, he sees all the parking tickets amassed in her windshield, and he's like, boo, you should take care of those because they've been booting people up left and right behind unpaid parking tickets. So launch on for that. Put a pin in that. And Nick offers to follow Abby back to her place in case she breaks down again. And she's like, no, I actually live in my car, homie. Like, it's good though. Thanks. Like, this is my home on wheels. She's like, I don't care about living here though, as long as it gets me to auditions. Like, she's got that, like, I'll do whatever it takes. I've got hunger in my eyes, whatever it takes. I've got hunger in my eyes and fire in my belly. And he just loves that kind of girl because he's obviously got to help her. He's got to come to her rescue and offer up Connor's old room at the Lux. So he's like, I can solve all your problems. Come with me. And come with me. I'm Nick. I'm gonna rescue you.
We love a white knight. Jacob, we don't.
So we are back to Alicia, who is clearly exerted at the end of the audition. She's sweaty. She's still hot though. But she's chatting with the like more exerted dancer that she was giving the water to earlier, and she was like, oh, are these always so long? And Alicia tells her that they're only short if you're not picked. So just then they read the number, the list of numbers that they are calling back. Alicia is the last name to be called, and she does the thing where she looks at her number and she's like, oh yay, and then looks at the newbie's number and she's like, oh damn. And she's like, yeah, I thought you did really great because I'm the casting director and that matters.
Alicia sounds sweet.
She's very sweet. She's definitely going out of her way to like be sweet to this girl. And she also kind of lags behind and does this, you know, kind of interaction and tries to soothe her, like hanging back from going to her own callback, essentially. Mm-hmm. And the guy who's called the names is like, are you ready, number 51? We're ready for you. And so it's clear that she does care about empowering and lifting up her fellow person over maybe her own success sometimes. So we are meeting Eddie with Abby. Eddie is a character. He is the manager of the Lux. He tells her that he cannot let her stay there without a security deposit and a week's rent, which is actually not that bad to move in somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, it's long-stay motel, so I kind of feel like a week's rent is like the other place's equivalent of like a month's rent.
Right. A week's rent is probably
not in like amount, but in
not
like
an amount, but right. But like that kind of transaction.
It's like a micro economy.
Exactly. Like he needs some, you still need assurance because there is kind of like the extended stay expectation, like the long stay. So yeah, that's the standard here. But she does not have that. But of course, Nick has a spin on it. He says that she is Canadian and that the bank screwed up her American wiring from her Canadian bank account, but that she's good for it. And he asks her a very serious question. Caroline.
Nick does or Eddie?
Eddie asks Abby a very serious question. Caroline, chocolate or vanilla?
Is it racist if I say vanilla?
It is not, but she probably wouldn't have been okay with Eddie because he was looking for chocolate. He's like, that's the right answer, because she thinks she's like, chocolate? And he's like, yeah, that's the right answer. So she's in. And Abby is like, I'm super broke, dude. I'm going to be evicted like in less than a week. He tells her, I like to get paid on Friday. So she's like, I'm not even going to make it to Friday. Like, I don't have the money to pay him. And Nick says, well, we got you out of your car. We got you a few more days in L.A., like, let's just get blackout drunk and we'll figure the rest out later. There's a party tonight. And of course, you know, that's her welcome to the Lux. We pan up. We see the deluxe suite sign. It's a dump. But they may have made it like kind of a welcoming sort of like 20-somethings cesspool of debauchery. There are vibes. I, you know, a 20-something Avis would have. An early 20-something Avis. Like, I'm talking like I'm cutting myself off at like 25, maybe. Not like 23. But yeah, I would have enjoyed myself here. Looks fun. So we've got a beautiful, glorious, like, sweaty pool party in the works. We pan down from the deluxe suite sign to a party in full swing at night now. It's a couple hours later. We have the resident band playing. They do have a name. Do you know the name?
I do. It is Whale Tooth.
Thank you. Whale Tooth is playing on the balcony. They are the pool party soundtrack. And we are back with Raquel as two script bros approach her. And they profess to be very big fans of Teenage Wasteland, the show that she was on a number of years ago. And they wondered, they want to know, you know, why it was canceled so quickly or so soon. And she says, we had a bad time slot, which it just sounds like her canned answer. It sounds like this is her answer that she gives everybody because people always ask her.
Can I throw in a little fun fact?
Yeah.
So Raquel is played by an actress named Jewel State.
Mm-hmm.
And I know her from this, which got canceled way too soon.
Mm-hmm.
And a show called Firefly, which got canceled way too soon. And so I love, it's like an art, and they don't even know yet that this is going to get canceled way too soon, but it is art.
They don't even know. That's why you're on art. This. That's why you're on this series. I don't think we've mentioned that part of the series just a little bit. We do intend to cover shows that are, that were canceled too soon. And our own, well, you know, we have our own definitions of what too soon means. But so this something in the water, young lady. This is the second show you're on that
has been canceled too soon.
So many shows get canceled too soon. It's not her fault.
I know, but I'm not. I'm only half blaming her. So these guys inform her. They basically like kind of info dump a little bit. They tell her that the CW is casting a reboot of Teenage Wasteland, and is she involved, and like to give them a little like insider knowledge. But we can tell by her face that this is literally the first thing she's heard about this reboot, and that sucks. Right. To not even be contacted about it. But so they go on to like talk a little bit more. She says that she wants to possibly fire her agent. She's feeling like she wants to make some big changes because they're not like paying her the attention that she feels like she deserves. And she also thinks that like she lies to them and tells them that she might have an in with to read for a part in the reboot. They soft pitch their script to her, which she seems very uninterested in initially, but then like she's like, oh, I'm busy, you know, blah blah blah, and they're like, yeah, we see you lying around the pool all day, we live here too, you literally do nothing, like we know you have time to do this. And then some random girl comes up and she says, can I be in your movie? And then of course that makes Raquel want to like snatch the script back. She's like, I will read this, unhand it, you hussy, whatever. So we're back to Abby and Tariq. Abby is asking Tariq if he pitched the beats he was talking about earlier, and he says that he has not a chance, that they still haven't listened to anything, that he, you know, any of his ideas, any of his tracks, and that he is just, you know, upset because he claimed they wanted a go-getter, that like someone who was creative, but it just seems like they want somebody to go get all their shit, like all their meals for him, and, you know, wait on them hand and foot. And Abby's like, you know, you need to make them listen. And he basically tells her that that's not the way hip hop works, and he doesn't really know what to do. And she says, well, I don't know what to do either. Then, you know, continue to be like, she calls him a dog chauffeur. So that's fun. That's a fun thing to, I don't know how that, there's a dog involved. I think he said something about going to get the dog something tightened. I don't know. It's a throwaway.
Some weird thing that rich people do with their pets that they send the Tariqs to do.
Yeah, I don't know. So just then a topless woman walks by and offers Abby and Tariq E, which they both, I feel like when a topless woman offers you E, you take it. don't quote me on that, guys. Please don't. Please don't be the reason you take E from a topless woman. Use your discernment.
Yeah.
Eddie climbs out of the pool. Test your drugs. Get a drug testing kit. So Eddie like is clearly intoxicated. He pops up out of the pool as Alicia is walking by, and he's like, whoa, 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 what are you doing here, Alicia? Because clearly she doesn't attend their events. Like, she's very busy with dance. She says she has a bunch of auditions and classes, and she is usually like very strict with herself, but she is treating herself because of an audition that she's really excited about for Usher's tour. And of course Eddie's gotta be a yeah. Like, I don't know, it's, he actually does it way better than me, actually.
Yeah, that was the sound.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm gonna need you to record like
yeah
in that style.
Yeah.
Wait, it can be the theme song for this series.
I'm gonna hurt myself trying to do that. I'm gonna need to do that in private. But it's funny. It's funny.
So it sounds like Alicia's the only one really that's like really working it. I mean, Abby. Oh,
yeah, but Alicia's working her fucking ass off, and she is putting in a lot of hours to kind of perfect her craft and continue to get better at being a dancer, which is admirable. You can tell that she's dedicated and she holds herself to a standard. But she doesn't know anything about Macbeth. Do you know anything about Macbeth?
Yes.
Theater-wise?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he says something about how he played in a production of Eddie played in a production of Macbeth with I think Alan Sorkin.
I think that's who he says it. I think Alan Sorkin. I don't know.
Do you mean Aaron Sorkin?
Aaron Sorkin. Thank you.
Was he directing it? Because I didn't know he acted really.
He said I did a production of Macbeth with Aaron Sorkin. So okay. Yeah, with that phrasing, I would assume so. He's the director. And he says something like, you can't say Macbeth, you know, like that's a theater thing, though, that doesn't really apply to like, I mean, I guess if it's an audition, I feel like the crossover with like theater and dance for those sort of things is blurry to me. But so she doesn't know the thing about, you know, you say Macbeth and it curses the production or whatever, or curses whatever you're doing. You're not supposed to say Macbeth when you're doing a show of any sort. It is a curse. There's always one fucker who tries it, though. There's always one. And you need to tackle that person if you see them like mouthing the M, because it does. I feel like it throws off, like things just start going wrong, even if it has nothing to do with like
prophecy. I feel right. Like.
It has nothing.
Okay, but so did Alicia say Macbeth at her audition?
She says Macbeth talking to Eddie. She did not say it at the audition, but like, you know, there might be some like.
Okay, I think Eddie is like taking it a little too far.
Eddie's got Eddie-isms, and I think that's what we're supposed to take away from this situation. But she's like, I'll help you up to your room, and he's like, well, you're so nice, that doesn't even sound sexual. So we are back to Nick. He is introducing Abby to Connor. So Abby and Tariq are still sitting together. He brings Connor over to them, and he's like, hey, this is the guy that's throwing the party. He's leaving us because the show just got picked up. And he's moving into a mansion. Tariq asks if he was trying to. So, like, as Connor and Abby walk away, because Connor's like, hey, can I get you a drink? You look empty. Can I get you a drink? Connor and Abby walk away. And Tariq's like, did Lupe Fiasco teach you nothing? Like, you cannot introduce a very, like, attractive, attainable, approachable guy, successful fucking guy, to your crush. You cannot do that to yourself, because you're setting yourself up to be jacked. And you know, Nick is not seeing it. He's like, you know what, that doesn't even make any sense. Like, I've got this, it's fine. And Tariq goes on to be like, yeah, her boyfriend is long distance. And Nick is like, I can work with that. All you have to do is poke holes in their relationship by saying he doesn't understand her because blah, blah, blah. And then they cuts to Connor doing that same thing. It's gross. It's gross. So that's how we know that Nick is not as like good of a guy as he's like purports to be, because he has the same moves up his sleeve that Connor does. He's just not as smooth about it. So we cut to Connor on the roof with Abby, and he's basically like, yeah, he doesn't understand you, because if he did, he would know that you couldn't pursue anything in Toronto, because you're not one made for Lifetime movies. You're made for the big movies, the talkies, whatever. And I mean, it's like, to be fair, he has a charming, you know, nature about him. They're on the roof. She's on E. This is just a perfect storm, unfortunately. Abby is frustrated that her boyfriend doesn't understand her, and she kind of lets him in on, you know, talk to her in a way that leads to them doing a little bit of kissing and fornicating. Connor reveals that he has been estranged from his parents for most of his life, and he doesn't have a support system, but that he hopes that his success will kind of prove people wrong who left him, essentially. And Abby offers to let him crash on the couch in his old room before they abruptly start like having wild, passionate sex. So we pan away, we pan like up toward the sky, and then we pan back down because it's daylight now, and daylight looks terrible on them. They both are hungover. Like, I feel like the E come down must be really hard when like the sun is just like blasting on your face first thing in the morning. But she's like, did you use a condom? And he's like, I did not. And she's like,
Abby again.
She's like, why not? And he's like, I thought you said you were on something. Again?
Yeah, I don't think we mentioned this conversation. But who is Abby?
Menis Santos.
Oh, baby girl.
Manny is Abby, and they did not rewrite this pilot. They did not rewrite this pilot from it being Manny because they just wanted to be cheeky. That is the same exact conversation that this young lady has with Craig Manning.
First time, because it was her first time, so she didn't know what it was supposed to feel like, period.
Right, so and she said it was okay. Now she said she was on something. Very miss, like the communication bar is on the floor.
Because she was on something, and that something was cheeky. Okay,
That's what he says. She was like, he's like, did you not notice that, like, it was just skin? And she was like, dude, I was on E. The whole world felt like skin. Like, there. He's like, we need a plan B. And she's like, we sure do, but I don't have any money, so you kind of need to buy it. Awkward. Which happens. Shit happens. So now Raquel is on the phone with her agent trying to get into the Teenage Wasteland audition for the reboot that's been casting for 2 weeks. She kind of like tracked down some way that she found out they've been casting for 2 weeks. And she's upset because she feels like she has a great relationship with the production team and she needs to get in there. Apparently her agent already called and they don't want to see her. And she's like, call them again. But she hangs up on them, on her agent, as she sees Connor coming on the way out to go get the Plan B pill with Abby. But Abby is not with him yet. So she's like, I'm sorry for being a bitch to you. I know you did everything you could. I know it's not your fault. She's clearly trying to preserve the contact. Yeah. And he's like, can I call you next time at 2 a.m.? And she's like, maybe. And of course, Abby pops up at that point and she's like surprised to learn that her idol Raquel Westbrook lives in the Lux. Why do you live here? And she's like, but we're neighbors. And of course, you know, Raquel, she's acting old though. Can I say that? As like Abby walks away, Connor looks back at her and Raquel's like, she's cute, really cute. Like, you know, like you would to like a kid. Like it's right. Very clear that she sees herself as light years ahead of her in terms of her experience, but that makes it seem like she also thinks she's older than her significantly.
Well, she is older than her, but she older than her. So like, yeah,
but she doesn't that old. It's hard. It's, you can tell that she's got that duality. She's like, I used to babysit kids like you, you know, like, and now you are trying to compete with me. It must really suck. But yeah, they leave to go get the Plan B, and Nick and Eddie spot them on the way out of the Lux, and Eddie basically says Connor doesn't waste any time bagging that ass, and he's not wrong. Although he got the setup, so I mean, did he really waste time, or did Nick just, you know, save him time? Whichever one. So we've now got to get back to Tariq telling Dynasty that he can help him in coming up with beats for Drake. Dynasty is not trying to hear it. He, like, his crew, one of, I guess his head honcho guy, this is Jamaica J. He's like, yeah, we literally did not pick you because of your beats. We literally picked you out of a stack of packages and because you passed the background check, bitch. You are not talented. We don't care about your beats. Please clean up these various containers of Chinese food. Because he fumbles the ball. He gets a very brief opportunity to play some music for Dynasty, and he does he plays a track that Dynasty sampled in the 90s, which is at this point not that long ago, but like long enough that it's like, this is derivative, like this is from the 90s. And Tariq is just devastated because like I do something really cool in the next 30 seconds, and he says, well then you need to start with that because this is just derivative and clean up.
I'm bored,
bitch. Florals for spring, groundbreaking. Like it's been done. Get out of my face and clean up our various
containers.
Does he
say florals for spring?
No, but that would fit in.
So
perfect.
You did. That was beautiful.
Thank you. So we are seeing little cuts of Alicia. She's waiting at this point. The rest of her arc in this episode is waiting, unfortunately. She goes to waiting for the callback for the decision from the Usher audition to see if she got it. So she goes to the cafe where Nick works to talk to him a little bit. And he's like, you're going to get it. You're great, blah, blah, blah. Regular reassuring Nick stuff. And she gets a call. We don't know where she works at, but she is her job is asking her if she can pick up a shift that night. And she says, sure, because I'm not doing shit else. Why not? Now we are back with Abby and Connor. She requests to be alone to take the plan B so that she can, like, you know, have all the weird side effects and stuff by herself. And also says, like, you have to go move. Like, you have things to do. I don't want you around. And Connor's like, I don't want to move. Like, I would rather stay at the Lux, but, like, my manager says it's a good investment. You should not listen to your manager about shit like that. I'm sorry. But he basically says, I still like you. I want to be involved, but you have a boyfriend. You have shit you need to take care of. Please get your shit sorted and call me when you do. And he kisses her. Then Ron, Abby's agent, calls back to let her know that he got her into the audition that she missed the previous day. He confirms her and tells her that she has an hour to get there. But of course, she reads the box of the plan B and it says excessive uncontrollable vomiting is a side effect, and she's got a boot on her car, so she's fucked. No one that she calls is answering, so she calls Connor and he is like stuck in traffic, so he can't help her or won't help her. It kind of seems like a little bit of column A, column B. He's not rushing back, can't rush back, whichever one, and he tells her to take the bus, and she's like, sure, because I'm gonna just get raped and murdered on the bus, and my parents are gonna have to, like, put out an APB for my body and all of this stuff. I've taken a bus in LA. It's not that bad.
It's daytime.
It's the daytime. You're not gonna get thrown into a hockey bag and put into the back of somebody's white rapist van. You'll be fine. So Raquel is crashing the Teenage Wasteland audition. It's bad. It's terrible. It's a
choice.
It's a choice she makes. She completely ignores that the room is, like, brimming full of Black women reading for the part. The head of production sees that she is signing in and she's like, hey, yeah, my agent said I was confirmed, but, you know, they don't have me on the list. So, I mean, I guess there's a mistake. Can I still read for you anyway? And she's like, we're going in a different direction, Raquel. And she's like, what direction is that? She's like, we're going Black. She looks around. There's nothing but Black women. She's like, that's kind of a cliche, don't you think? Like the Black girl, the Black woman, the lead, like, and or the,
is it the lead? The lead,
sorry, the best friend. And, you know, of course the stare she gets, she's like, well, this is the direction we're going, this is what we're doing. And she talks about, oh, the thing said colorblind casting, the ad, and she said, I would like to not have an all-white show that does not represent reality.
That's what colorblind casting means.
Yeah. And of course she puts her foot further up her ass in her mouth, I don't know, whichever one you prefer, and she says that she can sometimes pull off Latina. She is told that she will be kept in mind. She will not. She will not.
Isn't this a reboot?
This is a reboot.
Of a show called Teenage Wasteland.
Yes.
That's like 10 years old. So it wouldn't make sense for her to have
For her to reprise the role that she made famous. No, it wouldn't. No, it wouldn't, Caroline. That makes no fucking sense. Yeah.
Right, like the only woman over 30 getting in that room is Bianca Lawson.
She's like, I've been playing a teenager for 30 years. Like, I'm a vampire. I am a vampire. I'm a vampire. I'm a vampire. So Abby arrives at the Alan Bernstein audition. This is the director she loves so much and idolizes. And she basically dumps her whole life on him about her booted car, the bus, and her money woes. But she manages to do a really nice, like, piano. Like, she plays the piano and does, like, a stripped-down version of Taking Care of Business. But he's, like, an asshole. He's like, we just need you to sing, because she just got the audition an hour ago. She does not know the song that they want her to sing. So he's like, She's like, can I sing anything? And he's like, yeah, I mean, to sing Taking Care of Business. I don't give a fuck. We just need to know you can sing. So she actually does sing Taking Care of Business, and she does it very well. I don't know how she just arranged her own version of Taking Care of Business, and like, it's a perfect for her voice and in the perfect key, but whatever. She does it, and we are now back to Tariq. He is told to send the beats to Drake. Sorry, that is not true. She is singing. This is a montage. She is singing Taking Care of Business as Tariq is told to send the beats to Drake. And in a bold move, he attaches one of his own personal beats to the track email and sends it off. And Abby finishes her song. She vomits all over the piano just as she is asked, could she read some sides? Just vomits. Just,
oh, babe.
She tells him that she was holding it in and she just couldn't hold it in anymore. And she says that she accidentally took a Plan B. She's not contagious. It's fine. It's okay. But she is told to go home. Just go home. Because when the piano is thrown up on you, it's time to call it a day. So it's unclear whether or not she's actually going to come back, as Alan has said. So this very weird, okay, this is Nick's, we're back with Nick now and his stand-up. This person who I did not care to Google because she was just the weirdest, most bizarre, like, cameo in anything I've ever seen. This person, Mary Lynn Rajkub, I don't fucking know. I don't know this person. This person is terrible. If you guys know this comedian, this early 2000s comedian, she is not Sarah Silverman. She like compares, she says she's Sarah Silverman, but she's not.
Oh, no, never mind. I found it.
Rice Cub, I think that's how you say her name.
Oh, Mary Lynn, I like Rice her. Cub.
But it was a very bizarre fucking cameo, and I was so lost. And I think whoever wrote that portion needs to take a hard look at themselves in the mirror, because I don't know who this woman is. I do know who Sarah Silverman is, and I'm actually really upset that Sarah Silverman wasn't in this instead, because it was just very weird. She comes and makes fun of Nick, and she like says that she's not Mary Lynn Rice Cub, and a story that Nick really likes about her and Rush Limbaugh was not a story she told. And it's just bizarre. It's like, why? It's like the whole joke is of her cameo is set up to embarrass Nick.
I think I love that from what I've heard about Nick so far.
I love it in theory, but I don't love it in practice, because she just doesn't read as the funny that they want her to read as. She's supposed to be giving dry, witted humor, and she's just giving cunt and not the good way. Because I love to serve cunt, but she is not serving cunt. She's just giving cunt, and it's not good. It's not good. They joke about, like, they basically, she's joined by a male counterpart who is not much better than her, and they like trash Nick's set. And I mean, that's all well and good, because it's not a good set. It's the same set we heard earlier that's terrible about all the bags, and it's not good. But like, I am siding with Nick here, because they are more terrible than him. When we go back to them after a brief, you know, little insert for what would be a commercial, and they are in a bar at this point. It's, well, in the bar of the venue, and saying, giving him quote unquote constructive criticism that he needs to play smaller rooms, like his bathroom. he needs to, his stand up is like a warm bath. Like, you get in and then it's just warmer and warmer. And then like, it eventually gets like lukewarm, and it's just like, it's bizarre. Why are you telling someone this? And then he also says, I will give you constructive criticism, and I'm going to give you something nice as well. I need you to quit. But the way he says it, it's like, you thought it was going to be something nice, right? It's just a very, it's probably the weirdest scene that I've seen in a, like, a television show in a long time. It threw me off. I didn't include it in my first recap because it was so fucking weird and I didn't know how to talk about it. It happens. It's fine. I don't think it sounds bad. I just think it's annoying. It's a really weird scene. But it's over now. Dynasty finds out that Drake received 4 beats instead of 3. And Tariq complains that all he does is get burgers, run errands, and do shit that does nothing to do with recording or learning how to run a production business. And Dynasty tells him he needs to be grateful. You're in the studio with us. You get our burgers. You watch what we do. Like, you need to be grateful.
I don't really think that that's, I don't know. It just seems a little bit like a cop out, like, I've built a business, you need to respect me. But also I'm taking credit for these beats because they're fab, this beat, because it's fabulous and it's the only one that Drake like. And if I did not have this beat, I would not get this account, and I need this account and I need this money. And I probably need you because I don't have talent anymore. So that's what the scene boils down to, unfortunately. Dynasty's taking the credit for Tariq's beat. Drake liked the beat.
I mean, Drake liked your beat, and your boss likes your beat enough to steal it. And unfortunately, that's a little bit how this industry works right now. Unfortunately, hopefully it's a stepping stone. Hopefully, you have proven yourself enough to get something besides burgers and dry cleaning.
Hopefully. So now we are back with Raquel and the Script Bros. She says she will help them shop this to the agency that she belongs to, the biggest agency in town. They think that they can do the movie for $1.5 million. And she is basically telling them that she will be playing the lead if she is doing all of this work. So Nick rips up page after page of his stand-up set. He's got a bunch of books of shitty stand-up. He rips all the pages out. He's like, fuck this, fuck this, fuck this. And he's got a new nice stack of Moleskine. Is that how you say it, Moleskine?
I think it's Skeen, but I could be wrong.
I think
either
Skeen,
one
yeah.
of us could be Moleskine. Right.
I think it's Moleskine. He's got a brand new stack of Moleskine books, and he is ready to write some new, hopefully better stand-up. We don't know. Probably not.
Those are expensive notebooks.
They are. And he's got like the multiple sizes. He's got like the bigger one and then like the medium and then like the babies. I love Moleskine. They are fucking expensive though. I have not bought them in like 15 years. I don't have the money for that. Those were gifted. Connor unpacks in his new home, including appliances and a red tea kettle that he takes out of the box. But then he stows away the red tea kettle on second thought in a high closet. And as he lays in bed, Connor debates in calling Abby. We see his finger hover over the button. And then we see shots of LA nighttime as we are back to the Lux. Alicia approaches Abby, who has some of her shit in the hallway outside of her room. Alicia asks if she is the girl who just moved in, and they shake hands after exchanging names. Alicia encourages her to unpack, and Abby says she's thinking of going home, to which Alicia says there is a lot of that going around. Abby says her boyfriend wants her home, her parents want her home, and she is not booking shit. She just threw up on her favorite director earlier. Like, she's just not feeling it. She is frustrated that she could have all the talent in the world, be doing all the right things, making all the right efforts, and it still won't be enough. Alicia agrees, and she's like, that makes sense. But then she's like, do you want me to help you unpack? Because, like, essentially, you're not fucking leaving. Like, I know you probably want this too much to leave, essentially, is the undertone that Alicia's giving. This is Alicia. She's going to be encouraging. Abby wails that she's going to be evicted soon, and it's no point to unpack because she has no money. Alicia says that if it's money you need, that's easy to get. I know about money getting. And Abby is literally like, I am an illegal immigrant. I cannot work here. Like, I don't have papers. And Alicia says, I actually can get you an under the table job tonight. And Abby's like, that would be amazing. And we cut to Alicia dancing energetically on stage at a strip club. She goes topless and shimmies down a pole as Abby watches in wonderment and smiles intrigued. Cut to credits.
Beautiful. This sounds like a fun show. I'm intrigued.
A ride. Yeah. I'm excited to hear what the fuck happens with the strip club, because you can't get out of that. You need to run that back for me. What's going on at the strip club?
Well, thank you for telling me about LA Complex. I am excited to go watch the next episode.
Yes, I'm excited to hear about it. And we'll see you next time for episode 2.